You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 10th of April, 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As always, I have with me the producer of the Aryan Spring YouTube channel, who's just been released from his ban, Subal. How are you doing today, Subal?
Oh, I'm very well. I'm ready for World War III, and I'm ready to sign up for the army so that I can fight and die to protect the rights of Muslims and homosexuals.
That's what we like to hear. Full of the joys of spring. Full of the joys of spring. Yeah, that's the main topic, I think, isn't it? That's what's on everybody's lips at the moment, is this betrayal of Donald Trump. But is it really a betrayal? Just before you went on air, I saw an article by Thierry Mason, who writes for Voltaire.net, and he was pointing out a few things. He has a very different opinion on it to what most people are saying. His opinion seems to be that by this disproportionate response, this attack on an empty airfield with 50 or 60 missiles, is basically saying that if these rebels mount any of these gas attacks that they are notorious for, that Donald Trump could then feasibly blow them to pieces and come down on them like a ton of bricks. It looks like both Russia and Syria were warned that Trump was going to hit that airfield. They removed their troops. They stood down the weapons defense, because don't forget they had the Russian weapons defense there, which is top technology, which has never been known to fail before. So they must have switched that off in order to allow these weapons to hit the airfield. So why would they possibly be doing that? And if we look at what Trump was saying over the last couple of weeks about Syria, and Syria should be governing itself, perhaps this was really just a show of strength. I mean, my views on this have been different to other people's views in the first place. I don't see this as a betrayal. I saw this as that's something that he had to do. Everyone's been saying, oh, it's a false flag, it's a false flag, it wasn't sarin. Okay, it wasn't sarin. We know the rebels have been using chemicals. We know they've got these chemical stashes. They found one of them in Aleppo. And I just thought it was extremely irresponsible to go dropping bombs on a chemical stash. And the official reports, the official Syrian and Russian reports, admitted that that's what they did. They said that they targeted a rebel weapons depot in Idlib because it had chemical weapons in it, which I just thought was extremely irresponsible. Surely there must have been other ways to secure that weapons depot, and then you safely detonate the chemicals, or you safely get them out of there, so that there's no chance of civilians being hurt. But we saw scores of civilians were killed by these chemicals. So Trump really didn't have much of an option. If he had done nothing at all, he would have just been mercilessly attacked by everyone for saying, look, see, this is what happens when you have a hands-off approach towards Syria. He just goes out and gasses his people. He didn't gas his people, but that was rather reckless of him to drop a bomb on a chemicals factory. So I haven't seen any evidence of him going to war in Syria. And it seems to me that this supposed red line, a lot of the alt-right are furious at this. We've seen a demonstration today from Richard Spencer against this. And it just seems to me, well, hang on a minute, is the red line the way that Donald Trump treats brown people? Surely it should be the way that he treats white people. Why aren't we protesting that nothing's being done about this attack in Sweden? Why aren't we protesting that we aren't seeing pictures of the children that were severed to pieces by this Muslim truck driver in Sweden? Why aren't we protesting about that? Why are we protesting that he's gone in and shot up an airfield in Syria? It all seems very strange to me, and as I say, this article by Thierry Mason, that really does bring up a lot of questions. How come those missiles were able to get through? How come Syria and Russia were warned? How come the weapons defense shield was switched off? And just what's going to happen next? Subha, I know you're bound to have a different opinion to me on this. Well, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, well, you know, everyone's got a different opinion on this, haven't they? But, I'm not so sure. I did watch the Black Pigeon Speaks video on it, which made me feel a lot better temporarily. And he said something similar to what you just said about, the fact that, Trump basically just hit a bunch of concrete in the middle of nowhere. He didn't really kill anybody and he warned them first. And it's not a big deal. And he was trying to push the point that what Trump has done by doing this is he's basically silenced all these people that are calling him a Russian shill and so on and so forth. I mean, okay, but now Russia's come out and it said, you know, if you do this again, we're going to hit you back. So and Russia doesn't joke around. I mean, this is not like Kuwait. This is not like the Iraq war. This is not like Libya. Syria has Russian forces already in the country. It has Russian aircraft and it has Russian forces already in the country. America can't just roll in there and blow the country to pieces without fighting Russia first. So that's the serious point. I don't think anybody really cares what happens to Syria. I mean, it doesn't really bother me. Well, I mean, I think Assad's definitely better than ISIS. If they go to war with Syria, they're gonna clash with Russia. That's what nobody wants to happen. And I don't think Putin's messing around. So no, I'm not so peachy about it. I mean, we know that the neocons and the establishment, the Zionist government in America has been pushing for a war with Russia since forever. I mean, it's basically Russia, Iran, North Korea against Israel and America. I mean, that's the way the map is laid out, and Syria is just like a proxy war stuck in the middle of it. So you know the Jews want this war. You know they want to take out Iran, they want to take out Russia, and so yeah, Trump might not be. I just don't know. Nobody knows what's going on, to be perfectly honest with you. My take on it is that we have to react. We can't just. This was one of Trump's major pledges not to get involved in another war. And if we just sit back and watch him do this and not say anything about it, then we're just powerless. So we have to react. We have to condemn Trump for this. And the only possible, silver lining I see in this stormy cloud is the fact that everybody is pinning the blame on Jared Kushner. So there doesn't seem to be, even the normies, you know, everyone knows who's pushing this thing. And so it might just red pill millions of Americans into the Jewish problem. I don't know.
Well, this with Kushner, I thought all along, please don't go up against Kushner, Bannon. Just bite your tongue and go along with what he says, because it's Trump's son-in-law. It's his family. So if it comes down to it, if it comes down to between Bannon and Kushner, Trump is going to pick Kushner because that's his family. That's his family loyalty. All we can hope for there is that Kushner will get caught out in bed with some shiksa, and Ivanka will divorce him. Like that's all we can really hope for on that count. And that's what I'm praying for. If anyone knows how to set up one of these honey traps, go after Kushner. Go on, Paul. Sort that out for us.
Yeah.
Don't just go after flags and filming stuff on the border. Go for the head of the snake. Go for Kushner.
Maybe we should send Avelion or something.
Hopefully, I don't see this is going to escalate. I don't think there will be trouble with Russia. I don't think there'll be war with Russia. I think we've got to read between the lines here. Even though they're now saying, oh, Russia was directly responsible for this gas attack, and oh, it was sarin and chemical weapons. They don't actually mean that. They know that it's not Assad's chemical weapons, but it was Assad's bombs that set the chemical store off. So that's as good as it being his weapons in their eyes. And really, Russia, if Russia is going to be taking charge in Syria, which is pretty much what's happened, Russia has said we'll guarantee what happens in Syria, then they really should have said, if you find any chemical weapons dumps, whatever you do, don't drop bombs on them, especially not if they're surrounded by civilians. I think that's what the point of this is that Russia allowed him to take out this chemical weapons dump in the worst possible way that it could have been achieved. And they neutralized chemical weapons dumps in Aleppo without setting off gas clouds. And that was under Obama. And surely that must hurt Trump. The fact that under his predecessor, Bashar al-Assad was very careful not to let off any gas clouds. He was very careful to secure the weapons that were there and then to bring in journalists to see them. And as soon as Donald Trump gets in and it's the hands-off approach, it's like Syria thinks, well, hey, we can just take out all these rebels without a care in the world about the human shields that they've surrounded themselves by. So I could see these two different ways of looking at this. And I'm just so surprised that so many people are just so keen to throw Donald Trump under the bus for this and just say, oh, that's it. He's let us all down. He's betrayed us all. When really you would think people would have a bit more faith in him than that. My faith is in him for what he's going to be doing for white people, not for what he's going to be doing for the Middle East. I want to see his wall being built. I want to see him putting pressure on the European nations to stop immigration. I want to see him bring jobs back to America. And I want to see him reform the banking system over there. I want to see him do all these positive things for white people. And what happens in the Middle East is not so important to me. It's not a red line for me, put it that way. It really is not a red line for me. And I'm very surprised that it has been a red line for so much of the alt-right. Richard Spencer was prepared to go out there and protest today. They've been attacked by Antifa for doing so, which, again, that shows you what side the Antifa are on. They support wars. They're just against anything that white people stand up for. But I am surprised to see people throw him under the bus like this. I have been amused by some of the memes that are out there. There's a particularly funny one with the American bear, and it's Donald Trump is the American bear, and you've got Jared Kushner behind him, and you've got Ivanka on the end of the fishing rod as the bait. Because it's obviously to do with Ivanka crying about the dead babies and Jared Kushner pushing it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, what I will say, first of all, I'm really annoyed by all this tinfoil hat conspiracy type nonsense, which seems to have reared its ugly head again. This kind of, because there's always been a certain crowd of people on the internet who have just been saying over and over again that Trump's a Zionist and it's the Illuminati. And there's nothing that we can do, and da 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 da. And I've just had so many of these comments in the last 2 days that, you know, it's all controlled, and there's nothing we can do about it. And it's so utterly self-defeating, and it's just blatantly false, because the entirety of the establishment came out against Donald Trump. Everybody, all the news agencies, even the Republican Party itself, tried to stop him. And also, when he finally got into power, he did try to do things. I mean, he looks like he's going to build the wall. I mean, the plans are in place. He tried to put a Muslim ban in, or a terrorist ban, or whatever it was. And he tried to repeal Obamacare. So he's definitely tried to do good stuff, and he hasn't succeeded, unfortunately. But for these crazy people on the internet to start saying it's all just everybody's a Zionist, you know, it's just what this does is it just creates an incredibly defeatist atmosphere, and it just plays into the hands of the Jews because they want us to think that we have no power. That's exactly what they want, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if it was a bunch of Israelis, you know, sitting there with their computers, pushing this kind of thing forward in all the chat rooms and et cetera, because what are you going to do if you think you've got no political power at all? What is your solution to the problem then? Like I've got a little group on social media somewhere, and there's a guy on there, and he keeps posting these videos of what's his face, Varg Vikernes. You know, he did that musical movement, Burzum. People use his soundtrack for Jonathan Bowden a lot, don't they? But anyway, look, don't get me wrong. The guy's a great guy, white nationalist. Okay, good guy. But he's on a survivalist trip. You know, he's out in the forest somewhere in Norway with his wife and his six kids and trying to survive without electricity and stuff like this. And that's all very fine. I mean, if that's what you want to do. But if you think that's going to protect you from Islam, you're going to have a shock in about 10 years time when a bunch of Muslims turn up on your doorstep, you know, with guns demanding to have a conversation with your daughter about marriage. So it's just this kind of stick your head in the sand or stick your head up your ass and just not, you know, try to ignore the situation and try to go into survivalist mode and you know, watch the whole world burn is not going to work. And it's sad to see that has reared its ugly head. And whatever happens in the next few weeks, we have to continue to remember that the 2016 election was a great victory for us, and it did prove that we do have political power, and it did prove that a real grassroots political movement can actually get something done.
Yeah, he's tried to do all those things, as you say. He's tried to get the wall built, tried to get the terrorist ban in. He's tried to encourage the problems to be sorted out in the Middle East by stepping back. And then this happens, an atrocity, 90 people killed by gas. So yeah, I can imagine he was pretty angry at that. Like the final straw, he keeps trying to do what he do the right thing and do right by his campaign promises, and that happens. So I do have sympathy for him, and I do have sympathy for his actions. And it does look like this was a show of strength. Really, this was just a reprimand, and that's why Syria was warned. That's why Russia was warned. That's why all the personnel were removed from the army base, and it was just allowed to go ahead, really. And the conspiracy side of it, again, this is something that baffles me as well, because there's been all this, oh, it was the rebels, they set this sarin up, and it was all fake with the white helmets, and Assad didn't possibly let off the chemicals, he doesn't have the chemical weapons. But that isn't the point. I mean, Assad has already admitted that he was responsible for it. In their press release that they sent out, they said that they targeted a weapons depot that they knew had chemical weapons in it. The Iraqi government confirmed that chemical weapons were coming from Idlib to Mosul. And that specifically is why the Syrian Air Force bombed that area. So the gas cloud was directly attributable to the Syrian Air Force dropping bombs on that weapons depot. So looking for a false flag, looking for the rebels to have set this up and it all being fake, it's nonsense, because the Syrian government have already said what happened. And it is their fault, really. If you know that there are chemical weapons in a shed somewhere, the last thing you want to go and do is set fire to the shed, really. So yeah, all of that's just nonsense, looking for a conspiracy theory behind it. Go on.
Sorry. Yeah, no, my response would be to that would just be, well, who flipping cares? I mean, it's war. People die. I don't see why Trump's got to flipping attack Syria or chastise Syria. People die in wars. I mean, ISIS have been chopping people's heads off and raping women and burning people alive. And chopping their genitals off and forcing them to eat it. I mean, these people are absolute savage scum. So yeah, maybe the Syrian army did. They knew the chemical weapons were there. They targeted it for that reason. You know, I don't personally, I don't really care. I mean, it's just like, that's war. People die, and I don't see why we have to interfere. For me, it's very much a case of, if you want to beat ISIS, yeah, you have to team up with Assad. You don't fight Assad in order to beat ISIS. People don't like the analogy, but, you know, Winston Churchill teamed up with Stalin, right, to beat Hitler. And, you know, obviously nowadays we know, you know, that they're all a bunch of communists and run by Jews. But still, some analogy is there. The ordinary British people certainly did not like Stalin and the communists, but they managed to hold their noses and team up with them. So anyway, in the same way, I don't know, if your enemy is ISIS, why are you attacking Assad? You know, if you don't like the fact that Assad has blown up some chemical bunker somewhere, then you know, get on the phone and talk to him, make a deal. Don't attack him. It's ridiculous. It's moronic. You know, you're just siding with ISIS. I mean, even ISIS came out and congratulated Trump for doing it. So anyway,
it's a good point I think you make there about Stalin and us working with Stalin in the war. I think it's a good analogy, even though we know Hitler was a good guy at the time. They didn't think that, and they knew what Stalin was guilty of, and yet still they teamed up with him. But I think what we can learn from this is that they know that it wasn't chemical weapons that Syria had, because they know that the chemical weapons have all gone. I mean, the UN weapons inspectors have all said that there aren't any more chemical weapons there. All the ones that we sold to Syria have now been accounted for. So they know that. But what they did, they saw that there was this gas cloud, and they thought, right, well, we can use this propaganda. We can use this propaganda against Assad. We can say that it must be his fault, because these chemicals have gone off and killed all these people, and it happened in Syria. It happened after his airplanes dropped the bombs there, so we can blame him for that. We can blame Russia for this as well, because Russia is accountable for everything that Assad does, because Russia is aligned with him. Russia has brokered the peace deal, so we can blame Russia for this as well. And that's the way we should be looking at the news. We should be looking at what happens in the news and looking at the way that we can then turn that news to our benefit. And the conspiracy type people will look at the news and they'll try to say, well, the news isn't real. So instead of looking at that and saying, like I've just laid out there, it was Assad's fault because he dropped the bombs on it, they're looking for some way that the rebels set this up as if it was just smoke canisters and film and crisis actors, because they love to have the crisis actors in there for everything. So they were looking for that, instead of seeing the simple truth behind it, that yes, actually Assad was responsible because he dropped the bombs on the place. But instead of that, they'll look for some complicated conspiracy which is just going to confuse people, and it doesn't actually help us with our propaganda. It doesn't actually help us in our efforts. This is the biggest criticism that I have of conspiracy theorists, is that they throw the baby out with the bathwater. They throw out the mainstream news sources and say that they're all fake, and it's fake blood, and it's fake crisis actors. And then what have we got to propagandize for our own cause? If you say that all the Muslim attacks are false flags, and they're all just so that to give the government an excuse to crack down on civil liberties, then what can we use to bring people to our side? How can we wake people up to the threat of these other races pose to us? If we're going to suggest that all the Muslim atrocities are carried out by the intelligence services, carried out by our own, it's no good whatsoever for waking people up to the racial threat that we are under. And it also, people just think you're crazy if you think that all the news is crisis actors. I mean, the logistics behind that would just be quite incredible as well. You think how many people would have to be involved, how much money would have to be paid out, so many people would have to be silent. And it just boggles the mind when we know that Muslims are so keen to carry out these atrocities. And you just have to look at Muslim countries And it just had an attack in Egypt, in a church there. 100 or so people killed in a church in Egypt. And that is in a Muslim country. In these countries that are 100% Muslim, they have terrorist attacks every week. We might get one once a year in Britain. They have one every week in countries that are 100% Muslim. I mean, it is the religion itself, Islam itself, that encourages this. It has to be. They can't say that it's just people misinterpreting it, because it happens in every single country that it has them in. And the ones that don't have so much terrorist atrocities, well, they behead people and crucify them and burn them alive, like in Saudi Arabia. Exactly the same as ISIS are doing. ISIS are just observant Muslims. They actually carry out what the Quran instructs them to do. I know we were actually going to talk a little bit about the conspiracy things this week. We touched on it a bit last week as well, didn't we, Subal?
Yeah, I remember like 10 years ago when I was into the truth movement and I thought everything was a false flag. And then I remember looking at the news and looking at Iraq, and I was like, well, there's always a bomb going off in Iraq, you know? And then I remember thinking in my head, well, maybe it's good that they're trying to stop these terrorists, because if they didn't, then, you know, that'll be what ends up happening in Europe. And now look at our situation. Now we're basically, you know, becoming like Iraq with terrorist incidents happening left, right and center. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, Third World War, bring it on. I'm actually all for it. I don't think America can beat Russia, personally. I don't think they can do it. I don't think they've got the balls. I don't think Europe's got the balls either. I think you've got an incredibly demoralized, especially the European armies, incredibly demoralized armies. And they may try to invade Russia. I mean, they've lined up a whole bunch of tanks on the border. They may try to invade, but it's not going to be like invading Iraq and just walking over the enemy. They're going to hit some pretty tough, stiff resistance. And tens of thousands of soldiers will die, hundreds of thousands even. And when all those body bags start coming home and people, you know, the widows start lining up in America and in Europe, people are going to be start thinking, well, hang on a minute, why are we fighting this war? Why are we fighting against Russia? I mean, the everybody knows ISIS is the enemy. So why are we going to fight Russia? And the army will be demoralized. And Russians are really tough, really patriotic, really motivated people. And they will fight to the death, because it's a country, it's a fight on their land. Their backs against the wall. They will fight absolutely to the death. And I don't think we can beat them. And I don't want to beat them. And if it does come to that, then hopefully we'll just, you know, Europe and America, they'll just smash against this wall of Russian warriors, and then Putin will just push forward and conquer Europe, and then remove kebab.
I think it's just saber rattling. I think it is just saber rattling. That's all it is.
Okay.
it's just a show of strength in the Baltics and East Europe, where they're putting in all these NATO troops. It's just, look, we're all here. We're all on army maneuvers. Don't you cross over that border. That's what that is. And this,
well, you do know the Jews don't like the Russians, though.
Well, yes, but I don't, as you say, we couldn't afford to go to war against Russia. There isn't the willpower. There isn't the will there for that. They had a vote in the British Parliament a couple of years back. Should we go in and put boots on the ground in Syria? And everybody voted against it. And the feeling hasn't changed. They were talking about that when Trump bombed this airfield. They were saying, should we go in there and support him? And everyone was saying, no, we can't afford to. We haven't got the forces to do that. I think it purely is just a show of strength, all these NATO manoeuvres on the border with Russia. I don't think it will escalate. It'd be pointless for it to escalate. If it did escalate, then I would feel betrayed by Trump. But I don't think he would let that happen. You know, I think he's genuine. He wants to put America first. And all this was just a reprimand of Syria for being so stupid. That's all I think it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably a war for Trump's soul between Bannon and Jared Kushner. And if we've seen this before, actually, in the election campaign, because the first campaign manager, as far as I remember, was Roger Stone, I think. And that guy's pretty hardcore. I was watching him on Alex Jones the other day, and he wrote a whole bunch of, you know, books about Kennedy assassination and how Hillary's just the Hillary family or the Clinton family is just killing people and how corrupt they are and et cetera, et cetera. So he was pretty hardcore Republican. And he's the one which made Trump, you know, that was the Trump that we all loved, the Trump in the primaries where he was coming out and punching everybody in the face. But Trump got rid of him and replaced him with that other campaign manager. I don't remember who it was. And then the Trump movement started dying down and becoming weaker. And then he replaced that guy and he got the lady in and he managed to win in the end. But we've seen this before where there's been arguments within Trump's crew, Trump's people, and in the end Trump's turned around and fired one of them. And in the Roger Stone scenario, he fired the good one, unfortunately. And so now we've got this conflict between Jared Kushner and Bannon. We're going to see who's going to get fired. Is it going to be Bannon? Is it going to be Kushner? It's not going to be Kushner.
That's my worry. That's the worry. That's the real worry. Bannon should have done all that he could to ensure there wasn't any conflict between him and Kushner. He really needs to
I'm sure he's having a hard time.
Yeah, I've seen these reports. He's called him a cuck. He's called him a globalist. There's a lot of bad feeling in the mainstream media, apparently, that he's been saying, because they're obviously going to stir this up. He is still chief of staff. He's still got Donald Trump's ear. He's still Donald Trump's right-hand man. But if he falls out with Kushner, then there are going to be problems. I just hope he's a bigger man than that. And doesn't get involved in all of that and tries to put his ego to one side and thinks of the American people and serving the American people rather than getting one up on Kushner. Because he needs to be in there to balance him out. And if it comes down to it, Trump is going to support his son-in-law, isn't he? That's what people do. They support their family. Trump is a family man.
Yeah. I think unfortunately, he's also, I mean, let's face it, he's a businessman, right? He's from the merchant class, and he's not ideologically strong. And I don't know how many books he's read. I mean, he's obviously incredibly intelligent. I mean, no one's doubting that. But he doesn't have this firm ideological backbone, as far as I see it. He's all about the deal. I mean, this is what he ran on his campaign trail. He's all about the deal. He wants to make a deal. So, you know, if I was a Jew, what I would do is I would read his book, The Art of the Deal. I think he's got other books as well, and figure out his psychology, and you know, offer him something that he can't refuse. You know, and it seems to me that, you know, maybe he got into power, he tried to do these reforms, he tried to drain the swamp, he hit a brick wall, and now he's scratching his head and he's thinking, well, you know, I was listening to this guy Steve Bannon. And none of his plans worked. And on the other hand, I've got my son, Jared Kushner, and he can get stuff done, right? Because he's a Jew, and he's got all the neocons on his side. And so now maybe he'll make a deal with them. That's the way I see it. I think he's fallen into bad company, got the right intentions, fell into bad company. He doesn't have the moral backbone, the ideological spine to keep pushing through the fight, and he wants to make a deal. That's what businessmen do. They try to, you know, get a quick fix to things. So maybe that's what he's doing. I mean, as a best case, as soon as I think maybe he bombed Syria because, you know, to get some domestic deal in America. Maybe it's a case of, yeah, okay, I'll hit Syria if, you know, you allow me to put my Muslim ban in, or you allow me to, you know, wreck Obamacare or whatever. Maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. I mean, who'd flipping knows, right?
Well, if he's the merchant class caste, which I think is a very good analysis of yours there, that he is the merchant caste, he's an archetypal merchant, then he will be trying to do deals through this. He will be trying to get something going so that he can get his other policies through, since he's given in to them on this one. I mean, he'd be stupid not to actually do that. I think that's an interesting way of looking at it there.
Sharpen your knife, get ready for the war. I will say this. I do agree with you when you're saying, like, you know, like, who cares about this flipping bomb in Syria? Like, when I woke up in the morning, and I'll say something else, I think this may go down in history as one of those moments that you ever remember. Like, if you talk to the older generation, they always tell you, like, my mum, she tells me she can remember exactly where she was when she heard that Kennedy got assassinated. And for my generation, or our generation, I mean, I can remember where I was when I heard Diana died, and I can remember where I was when I heard about 9/11. This may be one of those moments. I don't know. Or maybe that's just for the alt-right, because we're really into Trump. But anyway, I will say that my first reaction when I woke up in the morning and opened my laptop and opened the Daily Stormer, because I like to read the Daily Stormer before I get out of bed. My first reaction was, I was a little bit like, but I wasn't really that bothered, you know. And to be perfectly honest, I found it more entertaining than anything else. I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. A new big fight. Because, you know, it's just a bunch of people in Syria. Like, who flipping cares, right? Some dead people in Syria. I don't give a shit. But then later on in the day, somebody, that Red Ice Radio, they put a video up on the Daily Stormer. And he was talking about the housing plans they've got in Sweden, and how they're going to build 2 million new homes, and how they're, like, knocking down churches to build these, basically housing for Muslims, and they're going to get 2 million more immigrants into the country. And I tell you, I watched, it was like a 20 minute long or half an hour long thing. I watched like 6 minutes of it. I couldn't watch it. I just had to turn it off. I was so sick, just sick and disgusted by it. So I understand what you mean when you say, like, who cares? You know, I don't really, it's kind of entertaining, like, the whole thing. You know, it's not like it doesn't disturb me as much as, you know, watching the migrant invasion. Yeah.
Your response to it has been entertaining. People getting so upset and annoyed and oh, we're totally betrayed, the sky is falling down on our heads, oh, it's terrible. It has been entertaining to see that, and you think, well, you shouldn't have so much faith in one man solving all your problems for you. You know, faith in democracy isn't going to save us, and all Donald Trump has done is he's bought us a bit of time, and hopefully he will put through some of these positive policies that will help white people. But I think if everybody just throws him under the bus, if all his support base start condemning him and saying, oh, we've been betrayed by him, then he's not going to be very likely to continue on with these policies that he was doing to appeal to us. That's a worry of mine, is that if he sees everybody that helped to get him into power turning their back on him and saying, oh, that's it, we don't care anymore, then he's just going to go straight in there with the neocons. And he's not going to bother with these other policies, because he's going to feel as if he's been betrayed by the electorate, by the movement. Instead of having faith in him that he was doing the only thing that he could possibly do, everybody's thinking, well, we know better. We know better than him, and he shouldn't have done that.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, he promised not to start another war, and then he just went and bombed Syria, right?
But
so he broke a promise.
But this is it. He hasn't actually started another war. And if he says, well, I'm not going to start, I'm not going to interfere in the Middle East, and then because he said that, somebody in the Middle East takes advantage of it and pushes it to see how far that they can possibly take it, which is what it seems like. He said, I won't start a war in the Middle East, and straight away 90 people are gassed in Syria. That's the way he's got to look at it. Well,
who cares about 90 people gassed in Syria?
I don't care, but obviously the media care and the UN care and he cares because that looks bad on him. Because instead of Bashar al-Assad thinking to himself, oh, well, this is good, we can get on with getting rid of ISIS now, he's thought, well, I don't have to worry about civilians anymore and I can kill 90 civilians while getting rid of this chemical weapons depot. Yeah, it looks bad on him. So I don't think he has broken his promise. He hasn't gone to war in the Middle East. I mean, whatever promises he makes, he's got to rely on other people working with him, not taking advantage of that promise. Can you see what I mean? I'll leave you alone to do whatever you're doing over there, and then whoever's doing whatever it is they're doing over there, kill a load of people. And they say, oh, no, you can't come in and stop us because you said you'd leave us alone to do what we were doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I will say that I did make a video, and the title of my video was Trump is a Pussy. And my feeling about it was that I'd actually been wanting to make that video for a year, basically, just because I was frustrated. My frustration with Trump really began with Black Lives Matter last year, when they were like phoning up police officers and then ambushing them and killing them and then parading down the streets and chanting, you know, kill cops and stuff like this. And Trump didn't really say anything about it. So at that time, I wanted to attack Trump just to show him that, you know, this is not acceptable. But I kept my mouth shut because I figured, well, Trump doesn't want to turn black people against him and lose the election. So I think, you know, that's just one example, but I think there are other examples of people who have frustrated with Trump for some time, you know, with the decisions he's made, and people have been putting it off, saying it's, you know, interdimensional 4D chess and what have you. And they've been bottling it up and thinking to themselves, we've got to keep supporting him. We've got to keep supporting him because he's fighting with the deep state. I mean, like we were talking on the show a few weeks ago, you know, we got people marching on the streets, shouting Donald Trump, Donald Trump. They're getting attacked by anti-fascists. And what does Trump do about it? Nothing. So there's been an underlying frustration which has been building up for some time now. And now this is it. I mean, this is like, you could say the straw that broke the camel's back, I suppose. I mean, I personally think it's more serious. I think he's really broken an election promise. And he's got a backlash. I mean, we can sit here and say we shouldn't have a backlash, but the fact of the matter is the alt-right really is a uncontrollable mob of anonymous angry men.
It's a big overreaction. I think it's it's a huge overreaction, though.
Really. But the thing about meme warfare, as far as I understand it, is it's either on or it's off. It's either you're either pro Trump or you're anti Trump. You're either posting, you know, God Emperor memes, or you're going to be posting memes of Trump, you know, getting screwed by the Jews. It's black or white. I don't see that. You can't really do too many subtle memes. So now that machine is rolling now, the memes are rolling, and, you know, Trump's just swept away his most dedicated followers. So he's in a real bad position now.
Well, it's almost like, well, I think we're in just as bad a position. You know, we shoot ourselves in the foot if we go after him too much. I don't see that there's that much benefit to that. And these huge protests and saying that he's broken his campaign promise. He hasn't started war in the Middle East. All he's done is retaliate to a load of civilians being killed. That's all. I mean, he can say, I'm not going to interfere in the Middle East, but that does tend to imply that the Middle East doesn't go and cause huge atrocities where 90 people get gassed to death, including children on the television.
Yeah, but nobody in America cares about dead Syrian children.
Yeah,
nobody gives a shit.
I know, I certainly don't. But for some reason, the media do care about it. People do seem to care about it.
Jews really care about it, don't they?
Jews care about it. Yeah, the Jews are really worried about these Muslim babies over there, aren't they? That's what it is. It's these huge hearts that these Jews have. They just want to protect the Muslim babies from being gassed.
I think the alt-right just wants to show him that we're dissatisfied, sort it out. I mean, if Trump wants to, you know, show what a tough guy he is, why doesn't he fire that judge which, you know, stopped his Muslim ban? Why don't he arrest him and throw him in jail or whatever? Why doesn't he bring out the flipping National Guard and kick out 11 million illegal Muslims, illegal Mexicans, like he said he would? Why doesn't he do that stuff? He's the flipping president. Why doesn't he just utterly smash and destroy his opponents? He could if he wanted to.
He should. I mean, I agree. We've been saying this for a while, haven't we? We've been saying for a while that he should be going after the people that are going after his supporters. He should be going after the Antifa. I mean, he has had some success just with his policies and being anti-immigration. Illegal immigration into America is down by 67%. And people are saying that there are less mestizos, less mulattoes, less Mexicans around because they are already self-deporting. So he is already having a positive effect in that area. It's only this Middle East area that he seems to have let the people down.
He failed with the Obamacare, didn't he? That failed.
I think that was more to do with the Paul Ryan's substitute for it.
Yeah, so why not sack
enough?
Paul Ryan? Boom. You failed to get it rammed through. You're fired. Well, and, you know, more to the point, why the hell doesn't he talk about Israel? I mean, come on, let's just, he's in a position. He could red pill the entire country. All he's got to say, right? If I was Donald Trump, this would be my advice to him, how to get himself out of this sticky, crappy situation he's in. And I would have given this advice even before, you know, this whole incident happened. I would say all you have to do, right, first of all, praise Israel. Because the Jews can't complain when you're praising them. So just say something like, yeah, we want to make America more like Israel, and we want to have strict immigration policies like Israel, and we want to have a wall like Israel, and just, you know, run with this narrative, right? And then what are the Jews going to say about it? They'll be like, I don't know. And then run with that narrative for a little bit. And then just point out the obvious fact, like he keeps fighting with CNN. Point out the obvious fact that CNN's owned by an Israeli Jew called Aviv Nivo, who owns Warner Brothers, which owns CNN. And just say, look, why are these... Just say, I don't understand what's wrong with the Jews. They support a wall in Israel, but they don't support a wall in America. They support immigration, a ban on immigration in Israel. They don't support a ban on immigration in America. I don't understand why they don't support me. Just come out and say it. You don't have to come out and be like, the Holocaust is a lie or anything like that. Just talk about Israel and talk about the loyalty of the Jews and red pill the whole flipping country. I mean, there's just the giant elephant in the room, which nobody wants to talk about. Trump could just do it tomorrow. He could do it today. Just come out, make a press conference, start talking about the flipping Jews. He doesn't do it. So
it does seem as if this Jewish problem, which has been there right from the very start, he's had a Jewish son-in-law, he's been surrounded by Jews right since the very start, and we said, well, that's a problem. But at the same time, he's wanting to stop immigration. He's against political correctness. He wants to build the wall. He's against abortion. He's going to withdraw all the funding for abortions around the world. All these other positive things. And right since the very start, we've known he's been involved with these Jews. And we thought that we could get these pro-white policies passed, and the Jews bit, we would just have to put up with. And unless something happens, such as Jared Kushner cheating on his wife, which would obviously turn him against them. But apart from that happening, we've always known that we were going to have to put up with this Jewish problem if we got Trump in office. And it now seems that this Jewish problem is coming to a head. But it's not coming to a head on stopping any of these other policies. It's purely and simply him just attacking a Syrian airfield. I think the response to this has been way over the top by the alt-right, looking at the comments, looking at how excitable people have been about this. It's such a huge thing, a huge letdown for him. Richard Spencer going and protesting. Is that really our red line? What he does in Syria? Because as far as I can see, everything else that he's done has been pretty positive. The repeal and replace Obamacare, they still want to repeal and replace it. They couldn't do that because they didn't have the full support. I think the Democrats were voting against it. So he's obviously got to work a little bit harder on that one. But maybe after doing this, he may get some support on these other policies. He may be able to get the Muslim ban through now. He may be able to get some of these other ideas that he's had passed. We'll just have to wait and see. But I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say I no longer support Donald Trump because of this. Because I think he was between a rock and a hard place once a load of people have been gassed. And my own view on that is, well, it's somewhere else. It's Syrians, it's Arabs, it's not my people. I'm not interested in that. But because geopolitics is what it is, because international politics is what it is, and because America is seen to be what America is, he's got to do something about it. There had to be some kind of a response to that. It's just a shame that the response itself has rubbed Russia up the wrong way. But I'm sure Russia can be brought back round again. I'm sure they will be brought back round again. It's to their benefit to be on good terms with America, and it's to America's good benefit to be on good terms with Russia. I mean, what this has shown is that no gas clouds in Syria. It doesn't matter if it comes from the rebels or if it comes from Assad dropping bombs on them. Just no gas clouds and dead civilians, and everything will be fine. But don't create any bad press like that. I think that's the message that's being sent more than anything else.
Well, I think it's pretty hard to have a war without bad press, isn't it? I mean, civilians are going to die one way or another. If there's not a gas cloud, then there's an accidental bomb which is going to kill some kids, and they'll just stick their pictures up all over the flipping news. I don't know. If you're fighting a war, civilians are going to die. There's not really much you can do about it.
The important thing is the war we're involved in. You know, what's happened in Sweden? This young girl, body in bits. You must have seen the picture. Young schoolgirl.
No, I just switched off. Dismembered. Didn't want to watch it.
Yeah, it's horrific. That's what should be in the news. That's what the alt-right should be demonstrating about. What is he going to do about this? What's his pronouncement on this? Why is he doing something to stop that?
The alt-right wants to get white America. White America isn't really so concerned with Sweden. Unfortunately, white America is concerned about Trump starting another war in the Middle East. So I guess people are just jumping on that. I mean, that's where the mob is going. At the end of the day, if the mob of anonymous, angry, young shit posters on the internet take offense at something and they start pushing in that direction, then that's kind of what you got to go with. You kind of have to follow the crowd. I do sympathize with Trump. I haven't given up on him. And like I say, I think he's basically a good guy. I don't think he's an Illuminati shill. I don't think he's like some kind of Pizzagate pedophile like some people are saying he is. I think he's basically a good guy. He's trying to do the good job, but he's trying to drain the swamp, and now he's stuck in the swamp. And he's surrounded by neocons, and he's listening to bad advice, and he made a mistake. And hopefully we can bring him back around, hopefully by demonstrating and showing our displeasure, and by pointing the finger at Jared Kushner especially. I heard that hashtag fire Jared Kushner is trending on Twitter. By pointing our displeasure at that guy and blaming the whole thing on him, which I think is a real silver lining, because it's a real red pill for America. It's like, by the way, it's a Jew, you know. So maybe we can bring Trump back round, hopefully. Have to see what happens in a week's time. I haven't given up on him, but you can't just sit by and say nothing when he keeps faffing up, because he could solve all of these problems very, very easily. He could solve all of these problems. He could implement a ban on Islamic immigration very, very easily. He just needs to fire a couple of judges and override them somehow. You know, he hasn't been successful in his reforms. So, you know, now people are mad.
No, I think he needs to get more support within the establishment so that he can do these things, because he's just one man that's trying to do all of this. Hopefully now he will have a bit more support from the establishment and he'll be able to get some of these things through. I do have a bit of good news from Sweden. The Sweden Democrats are now the top party in the polls. They've doubled their support from the last time there was an election in 2014. They're doing really well in the polls. I'm not sure when the next election is, but if we could get an anti-immigration party in Sweden, then that would definitely be positive. It would be interesting to see the reaction to this latest attack. There's already been headlines saying that how terrible it is that the far right are benefiting from this attack. The only people that are actually going to do anything to prevent any more Muslim attacks in white countries are the right wing, and yet the media headlines are saying how terrible it is that we are getting more support because of this. But that is good to hear that the Sweden Democrats are now the number one party in the polls. I want to see the Nordic Resistance Movement, their political party, see them get somewhere in the polls, because they are the number one nationalist organisation in Europe, I think, the most professional, most ideologically pure. And any of our listeners that haven't actually checked out their English language podcast, please do. It's called Nordic Frontiers, and it's very, very good. Also, one of the particularly good things about it is that it has a different feel to it. You can hear from the hosts the difference between the Swedes and the English. All the European nations, we might all be the white race, but each one of our nations is uniquely different, has a uniquely different racial soul, racial character. And you can really hear that different Swedish racial character listening to Nordic Frontiers. I don't know if you've checked that out yet.
No, I don't know anything about that. Are they Swedish then, Nordic Resistance?
Yeah. The Nordic Resistance Movement is obviously the Nordic countries, and the Swedish Nordic Resistance Movement is the largest and the original one. And they've now an English podcast.
Sorry, which were the ones in the Finland then?
That's the Finland.
Sons of Odin or something like that?
No, that's the Finland Nordic Resistance Movement, the Finland branch of it.
Oh, okay.
Sons of Odin are a street organization that protect white people.
Okay, that's a different thing. Oh, okay. No, I don't know. I don't.
It's just good for highlighting the different racial soul that people have, the way they talk, the intonation of their voice. Henrik from Red Ice, he's Swedish as well. It just fascinates me that all these differences that we have between the ethnicities in Europe, and we want to preserve them. They need to be preserved. We might stand up for the white race and we're against white genocide, but that doesn't mean we want to see all the European peoples blended out into a homogenous white race. We want to keep them all separate. So it's good news that the Sweden Democrats are high in the polls anyway. Anyway, Subal, we're near the end.
Okay. I won't say it then. What's going to go on? I've been reading a book called the Kavelata, which is the Finnish national epic. And it was written in 1830, I think it was, by a guy called Elias Lönnrot. And it was just very fascinating to watch how this single romantic poem basically inspired an entire national revolution and it helped to establish the nation of Finland. So there you go.
Yeah, it's the national history, national mythology. It's fantastic that they have that. I think Tolkien based some of his Lord of the Rings trilogy on that as well. The Kalevala. It's good that they have it. These Nordic countries, they have a lot of history, mythological history. I think our ideas of elves and things like that came from there. I think maybe we used to think the Finns were like elves. And they've got all
That's definitely from Norse mythology.
Yeah. And the trolls and the goblins and all the rest of it. It was the ones that used to be under the bridge and tax people. They were the Jews.
Trolls.
Trolls under the bridge, yeah. Yeah, that's the Jews. Yeah. Anyway, talking to trolls under the bridge, asking for money. Don't forget to send donations to Morgoth Review. Don't forget to send donations to Radio Aryan. We also have overheads as well. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, Subol, for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week on Radio Aryan on Monday with more SS Britannia for you. We hope you have a wonderful week, and we'll see you all again next Monday.
You are listening to Radio Aryan. For an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.